From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We are wishing you a happy new year with our gift to you, one of our favorite annual traditions, Rochester's Favorite Books. That's our shorthand. We know it's really Rochester and the Finger Lakes and Western New York's favorite books because we've got guests from all across the area who work at local libraries. We've been sharing Rochester's Favorite Books since 2014, and we always do it at the end of the year. This year, we wanted to bring in people who are immersed in books for their work, their day-to-day life, to share their standout reads of 2020. And we know librarians have a wide range to choose from because they program across different contexts for communities. And some of our guests chose books they just read on their own. Some are choosing books that they brought to the community as part of various series. So producer Megan Mack and I are ready to keep it going with our guests now and expand our reading lists. Our first guest this hour is Anna Suwanavong, the director of the Gates Public Library, who is on the line with us now. Anna, welcome. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks. How are you doing, Evan?
Great. And this is always such a fun show for us. Really enjoying it. And I want to ask you about, you know, sort of your reading habits and what you think people ought to be thinking about this year, because everybody is maybe taking a different approach to reading. What was it like for you, Anna?
Oh, my goodness. So when I was invited to participate in this, I was laughing because I do have a little secret that I'm going to share with the world now is because I'm always around books all the time. Like I have a different interest of books that I like to read in comparison to my colleagues who are, you know, very selective about what they're reading. And I prefer to read things mostly if I'm going to read a good book, it's nonfiction, or if it's about fiction, I usually try to read some of the fluffy stuff because truthfully, I read a lot of the news and I read a lot of things that are like more serious that's happening in real lifetime. So I prefer to like lean towards the things that aren't going to kind of weigh so heavily on me and prefer for the light and fluffy.
You know what? Your colleagues throughout this program are telling us a wide range, including romance, sci-fi, fantasy fiction. So you're not alone.
Okay. But, you know, when they're talking about Harry Potter and all the other fantasy and sci-fi, I'm so not into that.
So what are you into?
Oh, my goodness. Like, I like to read biographies, historical fiction. I'm really in the past. I'm in my mid-30s. So lately, over the course of 5 or so years, I've been reading a lot of self-help, just trying to figure out life. you know, it's been a big transition for me this year with work. You said that I'm a library director, and I started that role in December. And as you know, the pandemic hit us right shortly after that. And it's been a big transition for me. It's been a huge learning curve. And, you know, the pandemic is something none of us have ever really experienced before. So it's just a lot about trying to stay afloat, trying to keep my sanity, and trying to stay positive for the staff and, you know, the people around me and for myself. So,
how much leisure reading are you doing at home?
Zero.
Zero.
Twitter counts, right? I mean,
that's amazing. And I sort of love hearing that about you. That makes us all feel sort of normal.
I totally don't feel normal saying that. And I'm glad to hear you say that. Yeah, you know, it's just like work has been super stressful. Everything, every angle is stressful in life. So I just don't have the time to do it. And when I do have time to do something for myself, it's usually just zonking out and resting and, you know, or just like I'm too tired to hold a book, to be honest with you.
I hear you.
Well, so, yeah, I'm doing a lot of listening to podcasts and stuff like that. So,
oh, man. Yeah. See, this is interesting. So is there one podcast that stands out to you this year that you loved?
Brené Brown, I think a lot of people.
Oh, Brené Brown is so good.
Yeah, and Tim Ferriss. I love the Tim Ferriss.
So I came to Brené Brown because I loved the TV show Ted Lasso. And yes, there you go. So
that's exactly my alley. Yeah,
there you go. And I was looking for, you know, just Jason Sudeikis and his co-creator kind of just talking about their mentality, because here's a show that actually champions just goodness and kindness while still trying to present an edge.
Yeah.
And they did a wonderful interview with Brené Brown, someone who I had never heard of. So what is the Brené Brown story? I mean, it just talks to people who are interesting?
Like, so, you know, what really brought me to her was the book, she was talking about, she had a TED talk about vulnerability. And that was really what spoke to me and what really got me more into reading more of her books and interested in, you know, her podcast and starting to listen as more and more people that I'm surrounded by are suggesting it. So the vulnerability piece really helped me open up about who I am as a person and just not fearing about it anymore and not really giving a hoot about what people are going to think of me. And that's something that's part of my growing right now, also being in my mid-30s. Am I don't know, late to come to that conclusion, maybe?
No, I actually think that's great. And I think that lines up with the theme of this conversation with you, that here you are, a director of the Yates Public Library, and, you know, you're not afraid to admit that in your downtime, you're spending more time with podcasts. You know,
yeah,
that's so real. Brené Brown is a really cool name to look for, because that lines up exactly with the podcast that I listened to when she did it on Ted Lasso. And I think that's mm-hmm. really helpful for people. Really, really cool. All right. 30 seconds. What are you looking forward to most in 2021?
Ooh, 2021. Just, you know, having a better set of tools with me in 2021 to face all of the different challenges that are, you know, going to come. I read something really funny. It's like, you know, why is everyone excited about 2021? If they're turning 21, things are going to get crazy. Like, it's going to start drinking now. It's that drinking age. Are you kidding? Why are we looking forward to 2021?
Fair. That's fair.
But, we say this every year, like, we're going to look forward to the next year. It's going to be better. You know, it's really about just managing what life brings to us. So, that's where I'm at. It's just learning how to just navigate and just be cool with it.
Well, thanks
Not
for the
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things you don't have to accept, but
No, I certainly hear that. And here's to a wonderful 2021. Thanks for the work that you and your colleagues do at the Gates Public Library, Anna.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it so much.
It's Rochester's Favorite Books, an annual conversation we have this time of year. Our guest this hour is Ron Kersup. He's the executive director of the Pioneer Library System, which includes 42 libraries in Ontario, Wyoming, Wayne, and Livingston counties. Ron, thanks for joining us on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we'll start with your book of the year, Ron. What was your book of 2020?
My book of 2020 is actually a reread. I read it a couple years ago, and with everything that's going on this year, I thought it's pretty relevant, and the title of it is Factfulness, 10 Reasons We're Wrong About the World and Why Things Are Better Than You Think, and it's written by Hans Rosling.
A book about facts in 2020, a year in which there's been controversy about information and sourcing and all of that. What brought you back to this book this year?
I think the biggest thing is that this book, the way that Hans Rosling kind of lays it out is that there's a lot of information out there, and how we take in that information and how we think about it isn't always presented in a way that brings us to the conclusions that we should. So he talks about how with everything that's out there, there's a handful of information like the way people believe that the world is, how it's poorer, less healthy, more dangerous, and how that actually isn't true in all instances. And we have all these biases that we get caught up in, and that's the filter that we put all this information through. And the argument throughout the book is that things aren't as bad as they say they are, and we have to kind of look at, just because things are bad doesn't mean that they're not better in certain contexts. And the kind of lovely thing about the book is that it breaks it down into these 10 segments, so you don't have to go from beginning to end. There isn't a strong narrative that goes throughout it. You can read a chapter of it, think about it for a while, and then kind of go back to it a little bit later. But it has all these like great ways to kind of change the way that we think about information that helps us better understand how things are operating around us.
We've had a lot of conversations on our program this year about how people form beliefs and how they come to those biases that you mentioned. So if you were to choose maybe a chapter or a lesson from that book that took you by surprise or maybe changed how you think about things. Is there one in particular that you could name?
Yeah, so kind of opening up. So if people pick up this book, the first chapter is about this the idea of a gap instinct, and it's this old or this kind of prevalent idea that we have the haves versus the have-nots, and this could be talking about their socioeconomic status. It could be talking about their access to healthcare. It could be all kinds of things. And the way defining it as those people who have something and those people who don't have something is kind of an outdated way of looking at it. And what he does is he breaks it down into four different categories and how different parts of the world kind of level up through these different four categories. So it's not this stark difference between, you know, I have access to healthcare and education and you do not. It's more of in each different level, where are the clusters of people falling? And then in each of these four levels, how can we work to make these better? And these the levels are primarily based on economic status for how much somebody would make in a day. In the United States, we're all roughly level 3 and 4. And when you break it down into kind of these more micro categories, it helps understand how people get from one level to the next level through generations, which is really interesting to think about.
Hmm. Repeat the title of the book and the author for our listeners in case they want to write it down for their book lists.
Yeah, so the title of the book is Factfulness, and the author is Hans Rosling, and he actually passed away just before the book was published. So his son and daughter-in-law actually took it through publishing, and that's Ola Rosling and Anna Rosling. And Bill Gates actually said this was one of the most influential books he had read, and he offered back when this was published, he offered any college grad that wanted a copy of it, he would buy it for him, which I thought was really interesting.
Oh, wow.
So I definitely recommend this. And if you're not interested in reading it, there is, if you open up your favorite podcast app and you search for Factfulness, they have this great breakdown, an audio breakdown of each one of them. But I do recommend the book because it has a bunch of great charts and graphs in there that kind of help tell the story that the author's trying to get across.
Is this a book that you have found patrons taking out from your library system?
I'm not sure if in 2020, I know when it was first published, it was pretty popular. I think that this is one that people may have not have defaulted to in 2020, mainly because I know a lot of people there's a lot of information coming out, and there's a lot of people that don't necessarily want to read kind of this more intense nonfiction to get more information or kind of change the way that they're looking at things, just because it's exhausting, you know, to take on all the information that's coming, plus kind of at the same time think about how can we change our biases that we're looking at. But I do think it's something, as we have a bit more space to think about what's going on in the world, picking a copy of this up, I think, would be a really, really good idea.
I think the role of librarians has been so important this year. And we've talked to a few school librarians and college librarians who say that they're hearing from more students who are coming to them to help them source information. How would you say, if at all, the role of libraries has changed or librarians has changed this year, Ron?
Yeah, I think in general, for public libraries, instead of just being a space, because that's a lot of the time what public libraries look at being, is this space where the community can gather, they can get materials, they can further their own kind of personal education, and they can get together with their friends, their groups, and things like that. And what it's become a bit more is how can we move it into the digital area and kind of bring that programming to people in that regard. But at the same time, how do we get materials to people as well? So it shifted a lot in terms of how we conduct business throughout the entire system in the four counties that we operate in. And I think that one of the big changes that we've seen is the increase in our ebook and audiobook collection and just the use of that, and how many people have checked stuff out. And circulation of physical materials obviously has gone down in 2020 because there was a pretty significant portion of the year that we were either shut down or operating at limited capacity. But being able to offer those online resources to people and bring them to places in the community, I think, is what kind of the direction that we're heading in, and also what we highlighted in for 2020.
Thank you so much. Ron Kursoff, Executive Director of the Pioneer Library System. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And Happy New Year.
You too.
It's Rochester's Favorite Books 2020, and our next guest is the director of the Ogden Farmers Library. John Cohen is with us. John, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Very good, and thank you for making the time in this unusual year. We're glad to put the spotlight on librarians. And the first thing we're going to do, John, is ask you if there was one book or one read that stood out to you above all others in 2020.
Well, I'm a big fan of books that have, like, wizards in the modern day, so I enjoyed Peace Talks and Battlegrounds by Jim Butcher. That was two books that he released this year.
The name again is Peace Talks and Battlegrounds.
Yes, there's just two books that he released this year because he had one big book that had to be divided into two.
Tell us about the concept.
It's in a series called The Dresden Files, and it's about, like I said, a wizard in modern Chicago. And there's been a supernatural war for years, and the first book, Peace Talks, is about, well, the peace talks to end that war. And the second book, Battlegrounds, should give you a clue about how the peace talks went.
I love the idea of wizards in the modern world, and I confess, I didn't know, is this a genre of literature?
Yep, it's called urban fantasy. There's lots of titles. True Blood, the books that's based on, things like that.
True Blood, what was the one with Kristen Stewart? Twilight, is that in that category as
well?
That
would count. That would count, yes. That's for teens, but yeah, it would count as the same thing.
Okay, so what makes this two-book series stand out? I mean, is it the quality of the writing and the imagination? What is it that stood out for you?
Absolutely. Jim Butcher is really imaginative. It's actually the 15th and 16th book in a series. And it's just, he does so much world building. You get to really believe it. You really believe how there could be these supernatural powers in the real world. And I just love it. It just hits me on every level. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Well, if you want to hit our listeners on that level, you can be a little bit more specific without giving too much away here. So what's at the center of this plot?
So the center of the plot is a wizard named Harry Dresden, who started a war with the vampires, kind of by accident, but he started it. And so everyone's been blaming him for a lot of books in this series. He ended the war a few books back, but in a very vicious way. And so now he is dealing with the repercussions of the people who filled the vacuum after the end of the war. And he has to deal with fairies and vampires and werewolves and just all sorts of supernatural stuff. It's really fun.
When you move into the realm of the supernatural, I always think about this when I'm watching either Star Wars or other series where obviously there's a lot of imagination when it comes to either technology, science, supernatural, whatever. Mm-hmm. For me, what I want is consistency of the rules in the universe. And so if I'm watching Star Wars and parsecs is a thing, okay, parsecs is a thing. It has to be consistent.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like if a ray gun is a thing, okay, but the rules of the ray gun have to be consistent. How important is that to you as sort of a fantasy fan? Because there's so much imagination. We're talking wizards and werewolves in the modern world.
Yeah. Well, you know, magic is one of those things that it's hard to define, but there are rules of it in the Dresden universe, although sometimes you have to find, like, loopholes to exploit in those rules. But it should make sense book to book so that people understand it. Because if there's no rules, then you might as well just say, well, bang, bang, you're dead, without any background to that. So you have to have established rules, like here's what I can do, when I can do it, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's where J.J. Abrams and the crew went a little astray in the recent Star Wars trilogy, though I don't want to start a war with any listeners on that. we'll set that for a different time here. How many books were on the menu what's a typical reading day or week or month like for you, John?
Well, you know, people think librarians sit around and read all day. We don't. But I do read pretty much every evening to kind of end my day, to kind of calm down after work and reset myself. So I read a good, if it's fiction, a good two or three books a week. If it's nonfiction, probably a book a week.
Had that changed at all during the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a little bit more time for reading in the pandemic, so it's a little bit higher right now, yeah.
But you didn't find yourself, you know, sort of consumed with pandemic stress and thinking, I'm not sure I really want to be reading as much.
No, the pandemic stress expressed itself in other ways, probably reading a little bit more to relax. It's been a rough year, as it has for all your listeners. It's been a rough year for me. It's a trying time.
Well, some of your colleagues have told us that their favorite reads of the year, or maybe some of their more common reads of the books they read this year, were in either the fantasy, some have said romance, those kind of things that are just take you straight out of the reality of the pandemic. And I wonder if you find that even more helpful this year to turn to something like Peace Talks and Battlegrounds.
I definitely do, and I think it's reflected in our patrons as well. I've seen a lot more old TV shows going out, like Friends isn't that old, but Friends, things that they don't have to worry, they don't have to think about what's going on in the world right now. And it was definitely true for my book selections as well.
Well, the selections that John chose were so important that they got their own article in Newsweek only 2 weeks into the pandemic in the United States. It was the end of March when the news came out about Peace Talks and Battlegrounds, and part of this series. I think there's like 17 books in the whole series now, something like
that. Yeah, it's at 17. If you want to start with the first one, it's called Stormfront.
Do you need to start at the first one?
No, you could probably start 3 or 4 books in, but then it starts to get important.
Okay. So you've given us a lot of homework there, John, as the director of the Ogden Farmers Library. So before I let you go here, you know, I know your year has been different. All of our years have been different. But is the public reading more or less, in your estimation, during this pandemic?
I think they're reading more. I think they're checking more things out. You know, it's been harder with it when we had to do lobby pickup or curbside pickup for people to get items, but people are definitely asking for them. The phones are ringing off the hook for people to try to get their items. It's definitely a busy year.
Well, I appreciate some of the recommendations. We'll have fun with this, with Peace Talks and Battlegrounds by Jim Butcher. And John, as the director of the Ogden Farmers Library, let's hope for a peaceful and fruitful 2021. Happy New Year. Thanks for making time for the program.
Happy New Year.
It's Rochester's Favorite Books, our annual conversation, and this time we're putting the focus on librarians, hearing about how their work has changed this year and their books of the year. Our next guest is Jenny Paxson, Reader's Discovery Librarian at Webster Public Library. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Jenny, you described yourself as an eclectic reader. I know you've got a long list of books, but if you had to pick one book of the year, what would that be?
Well, the book that I just recently finished is Memorial by Brian Washington. It was nominated for a Carnegie Book Award in the long list. And my book discussion group that I am part of chose it to discuss. And I'm glad they did. I've been trying to read more authentic voices with all the things that have been going on in 2020. There's been a lot of books that have been published that are not written by the topic that they talk about in the book is not the actual person who has never experienced it. So I've been trying to read more authentic voices, and Memorial is definitely that. The two characters in the book, Mike and Benson, are in a relationship, and they live in Houston, and it's told from both their perspectives. Mike is a Asian American, and Benson is a African American man, and he is left by Benson to go. Benson goes across the world to Tokyo, to Japan, so that he can see his dying father. And Mike, his story is told in the same timeline. So you're reading one perspective, Benson's perspective, and then you read Mike's perspective at what happens in the exact same time period. And so it was definitely eye-opening because I'm a white woman, so I don't have that perspective. So to hear, I love reading about different people's lives and learning more from that. I try to get that in with every book that I read. So that was one of the reasons why I picked this up, besides that my book discussion group is reading it. And I was not disappointed.
Your book discussion group, I assume you had lengthy conversations about the book after you read it. What were some of the takeaways that you all had?
Well, we haven't discussed this one, unfortunately, yet. We're going to be discussing it in January. So I'm a little bit ahead of schedule, which is always good. I like to kind of sit on the book a little bit to see what my feelings are about it, you know, before discussing it with the group at large. But we've been reading a lot of different books that have alternative perspectives. Like we read White Fragility, and in another book discussion group, I read the Yellow House. And, you know, Black Lives Matter is definitely one of those perspectives that I think is really important for, you know, especially, you know, white people to really read these topics and really get to understanding it so that we can have a better discussion and better understand what's going on. So Yeah. I was saying that incorrectly.
I understand what you're saying. We've had conversations on the show this year about different books that are educational in this sense, and people learn in different ways and experience things in different ways. What about this book helped you see things a little differently? Was there, you know, a particular story? Was it a particular perspective? But what helped you get out of your bubble, so to speak?
Yeah, well, a memorial, hopefully I'm not revealing too much. I don't like to give too much away about a story, but one of the characters, Benson, he's a Black man, and they're living in a community that is well known for being a Black community in Houston. And so Mike, being an Asian American, he has a completely different perspective living in that community as Benson does. So, and me being a white woman, you know, seeing this from their perspectives was also very different. You know, I would never have thought that some things would be taboo to say or to do, you know, when you're, you know, interacting with your neighbors or discussing specific topics. And, you know, the book is very sexy and there's a lot of swear words. And, you know, so it definitely took my, you know, because I don't swear as much in my personal life as, you know, some people do. So it definitely threw me initially. But, it, you know, seeing, you know, everybody has a different perspective they're coming from. Everybody has a different culture they're coming from. And you got to get outside of your bubble, as you said, and really see what that is from that alternative view. So that was definitely something I wasn't expecting going into it. And Benson, the main character, he also has some medical issues that I have never experienced before. So it's like, those are also things that I think it's good to have somebody else's point of view, because obviously I can't live everybody's experiences. So
yeah, I think that's really important to recognize. And again, repeat the title and the author for us, Jenny, in case listeners
sure.
want to write this down.
It's Memorial by Brian Washington.
And that was just one of the many, many books you read this year. I know you've got a few others you want to briefly mention. We're down to our last couple minutes, unfortunately, but if you want to just read some titles and authors for people to add to their lists, I think they'd appreciate that.
Sure. I do often read science fiction. So one of my favorite authors is Patricia Briggs. And her newest book, Smoke Bitten, just came out a couple of months ago. And if you haven't read her books and you like, you know, werewolves, vampires, that kind of thing, this is a good book to read. And another book that I highly recommend is 7½ Lives of Evelyn Hardcastle. This book came out in 2018, and it kind of reads like an Agatha Christie novel, but it's got a sci-fi perspective to it. So if you like mysteries, thrillers with a little twist, that one's a real good one to try. And I loved Yellow House. And I can't remember the author on that one. I do apologize. But it's another Black Lives Matter book. And it's told from a woman's perspective, living through Katrina and living in East New Orleans East, and what it's like living in the poor area, and, you know, how the different struggles that Black people go through and what you wouldn't know about the poor end of New Orleans and the struggles that people have. So highly recommend that book.
And we're going to have all the titles and authors on our podcast page, listeners, so you can find the whole list there. And Jenny, before we let you go, I know you've been thinking a lot about how library work has changed, how reading habits have changed over the year. What has happened at the Webster Public Library you'd like listeners to know about?
Sure. So things really have changed over the last year. We really struggled in the first couple months while we were closed because people are really browsers when it comes to looking for new titles and authors. And so our bookshelves were pretty full while we were closed. But as we've been opening, people have definitely been checking more things out. One of the things that we've been doing is trying to have a more of an online presence. So we've been doing our book reviews on YouTube. And we also have done a couple of presentations for people on our YouTube channel of the best books that you might have missed. So that really has helped people find new books to read and new authors to pick. Another really cool service that we've been offering is this new Your Next 5 Reads to Go. And so people can tell us in our email or over the phone a book that they last read, and we'll select 5 books off the shelf for them so they can pick them up at the library or get them through our drive-up pickup. So that's been really successful. And our Reader's Discovery newsletter, you can sign up for that on our website. I give out suggestions for people. Most of them are digital suggestions, so people can find stuff online that, you know, they don't have to leave their house if they don't necessarily want to.
Jenny Paxson, Reader's Discovery Librarian at the Webster Public Library, thank you for all the work that you do, for your books that you mentioned, and thanks for talking with us. We hope you have a great new year.
Yes, you too.
I'm Evan Dawson. On Friday, New Year's Day, some special programming for you coming your way during the connection slots. In our first hour, reinventing travel after COVID. The pandemic has been a catastrophe for tourism and travel, but what happens after the pandemic? Then, in our second hour, public radio celebrates Kwanzaa. We'll talk with you on Friday.
It's Rochester's Favorite Books, an annual conversation we have. This year, we're talking to librarians, putting the focus on them and how library work has changed, how book clubs may have changed, how reading may have changed during the pandemic. And our next guest is Matt Kruger, Children's Services Librarian at the Irondequoit Public Library. Matt, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
We'll start with your favorite book of the year, your book of the year, Matt. What was that?
Yep. So it was a tough choice, but I chose Christian Robinson's picture book. It's called You Matter. He is an illustrator who folks may recognize. He illustrated the Newbery winner Last Stop on Market Street, which was written by Matt De La Pena. This is one of the first books that he's written and illustrated. It's a very simple book, but it's very moving. It's basically a story about reassuring you that no matter who you are or how you might be feeling, that you matter. Pretty simple, but like I said, profound.
Is this a book that you're seeing a lot of traction with in the library? Patrons taking that out?
Yeah, you know, Christian Robinson has been growing in popularity the last few years. Like I said, he's illustrated a number of books, and now that he's starting to write his own, I think we're definitely going to see his career, become one of the classic kind of go-to authors and illustrators.
I'm just looking at the cover, and it looks like there are many kids, different, you know, a diverse group of kids holding what looks like a parachute. I remember that from gym class in elementary school, that
yep,
parachute
yep.
game. So the primary message of the book, of course, You Matter. What would you tell parents about why they should check out this book for their kids?
It's one of those books that I think has a message for kids, but then there's so much more for adults as well. And it's serious, but it also has funny moments. It's something that could start a great conversation with kids. It can be looked at many different levels. I think there's something for all ages, and you can kind of, you know, increase the complexity of the conversation as kids get older. But it's also very short, and the text is simple. It's something that, you know, upon further reads, I think kids could start to read themselves. It's got all the kind of great hallmarks of a great picture book.
I think this year with kids, many kids doing remote learning, or they're not in school 5 days a week. Some are. I don't mean to overgeneralize, but the year
right.
is different. I think that's a fair statement. The year is different for everyone. And kids, I think, have adapted really well in many circumstances. But not being able to see their friends in normal situations, school is obviously different. What have you been hearing from kids and parents as they've come to the library or called the library about resources that they need, or just kind of support systems that they're looking to have as they navigate this different year?
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the most basic things is internet access. Luckily, a lot of libraries have been able to provide Wi-Fi hotspots to families who don't have a reliable internet connection so that they can be online and do that learning. Beyond that, ebooks have been a huge resource this year. We've invested a lot more in that. I've had teachers come in saying that they've never used them before, and you know, this is now the reality for how they are able to share books with their students. So we've definitely seen an increase in both of those.
Do you think reading habits have changed as a result of the pandemic?
For sure. You know, I was just having a conversation with a teacher yesterday who was saying that a lot of her students, they didn't have any books during the shutdown, and now they're just starved for them, and they're eager. I was never a big ebook reader before, but as a result of this year, I have become a huge ebook reader, and actually a lot of great picture books are available as ebooks now too. You know, I actually first read Christian Robinson's book as an ebook. Sometimes picture books don't really translate well to an ebook. So you'll see some are better than others, but I think that's definitely been a big change for a lot of people.
How did your library adapt to the pandemic at first, and how do things look now? You're at the Irondequoit Public Library, very large library, beautiful new building. I love your library.
Oh, thank you.
Lots of great space. Your children's section is, there's so much there. I was there with a family member who's 7, and he was looking through some of the Captain Underpants series. He loves those.
Yep.
And it was just so fun to watch all the different kids find their favorite series, find their favorite books. Of course, it's a little different this year, people wearing masks, but how has the Irondequoit Public Library adapted to the changes?
Yeah, so, you know, curbside service has been a big change this year. I think it's been our most popular offering. We're still offering that, but people are allowed to come in and browse the shelves for themselves. Sadly, you know, we worked really hard for the last, you know, all libraries have worked hard to turn their buildings into gathering spaces, community spaces, places where people want to spend time. And now we've really had to undo all of that. It's really a come in, find what you need and get out again. And that's been really hard. You know, we've had to take out all the toys. And so kids come in and they're like, well, what happened? But, you know, we've definitely been able to focus more on helping people find the right books, more readers advisory search tools. You know, we've created these grab and go picture book bundles for parents who, you know, don't have the time to search through all of the shelves. And that's been really popular. You know, we'll put together a bundle of 8 picture books on a certain theme, and they can just grab those and go.
If people want to do that, how can they contact you?
Yeah, so they can either, you know, at our library, and I know a lot of libraries are doing this too, they can call us, they can also email us, they can submit an order ahead of time, or with the bundles, we pre-make a bunch of them so they can come in and just browse a subject that they're interested in. Or like I said, if there's particular ones they'd like, we're happy to put those together for them as well.
Matt, thank you so much. Matt Kruger, Children's Services Librarian at the Irondequoit Public Library. Always nice to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
You too.
Next guest is from the Wood Library in Canandaigua. Alexis Lawrence is an adult services librarian at the Wood Library. Alexis, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, Evan. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for making time for the program. So I'm going to start with the one read, one book that stood out above all others for you. Is there one from 2020 that comes to mind?
I would say it's Small Great Things by Jodi Picoult.
All right. Tell us about this one.
So it's not one of my typical reads, but it's one of the great things that I enjoyed about this is because it was one of the book club reads that we had in it.
The Wood Library Book Club?
Yeah.
Well, without giving too much away, can you take listeners through some of the central ideas and the plot here?
The reason why I enjoyed this book is because I felt like it was a great way to begin having a conversation about race in America. The book really revolves around a delivery nurse named Ruth who is ordered not to touch or go near a baby of a white supremacist couple.
Wow.
And then after the baby dies, Ruth is charged with the murder and then taken to court.
Whew.
So it's a great conversation if you want to start having conversations on race, and it gives you multiple perspectives of the different characters and how they deal with race going through the story.
What do you think white readers will get out of this book?
I would think they would gain more perspective of like the concept of race and how they may perceive race in society, and maybe more of like white privilege, and maybe more of a perception of some things that African Americans may go through with police or situations or circumstances on jobs and things like that. So it's just more of a conversation or eye opener to different circumstances and situations that may happen in society.
Eleanor Brown of the Washington Post called this book the most important novel that Jodi Picoult has ever written. And I'd like to just read a little bit from that review and get your take on it if we could, Alexis. So Eleanor Brown says that this is a book that will challenge her readers, and readers need to be ready to be challenged. She writes that to survive in the white world, Ruth has convinced herself that race doesn't matter. I treat people the way I want to be treated, she says, based on their individual merits as human beings, not on their skin tone. So when white supremacist Turk and Brittany Bauer refuse to allow Ruth to care for their newborn and the hospital acquiesces, she is shocked. end quote. And that's the start of this review that says, you know, there's so many concepts that readers have to feel prepared to be challenged on, especially this idea that, oh, well, if we just treat each other based on the content of who they are and sort of act like race doesn't matter, that things will be fine. How common do you think that idea is in our world, Alexis? How often do you think people are maybe surprised that people say, I don't see race, I don't consider race, I just treat people based on the quality of their actions?
I think that concept and idea is a lovely thought, but I think it's more complex than that. I mean, I think the same thing would go if, let's say, if me and you were walking or going into a store together and you wouldn't realize the looks that you would get, but it happens. Or the different, like there's a difference between how a young African-American kid would get treated if he was in a different neighborhood as opposed to someone else or in a store. So the concept behind this book is that the delivery nurse is essentially treated differently compared to the white nurse who, you know, is in the room prior to her. And then, you know, things escalate afterwards.
Picoult says that the novel represents her grappling as someone white and class privileged with issues of racism, both individual and institutional. And she writes, quote, I was writing to my own community, white people, who can very easily point to a neo-Nazi skinhead and say he's a racist, but who can't recognize racism in themselves, end quote. Mm-hmm. Can you offer just a kind of a thought on that particular point that Picoult makes in her author's note, Alexis?
I think the idea is like if you went into a all-black neighborhood and like the emotions that you may feel if you were in that neighborhood by yourself and how comfortable would you be in that neighborhood by yourself? Or if you were in an all-black classroom and you were the only white person in there, and you don't notice the differences because you don't have to actually experience those things. But it's different if you were a black kid and you went to an all-white school, or you transitioned to a suburb area and you're the only African-American in that suburb. And you can point out and see those differences compared to people who may not experience it. And so you don't notice those subtleties or differences, or you don't see that there is a difference as far as race or racism or how it makes you feel or the differences that you may act towards other people because you're not in that situation. But you can see it in someone who's blatantly like a white supremacist who blatantly acts differently or, you know, showcases their disapproval or dislike for someone else.
Well, before I let you go, this has been, you know, we talk a lot about the pandemic year, but there's been a lot of pain and sort of societal grappling with issues of race following, of course, the killing of George Floyd and a summer of demonstrations. When libraries take on this kind of programming, are you finding more openness among your white readership to read books like this one that challenge them?
I do. So this was a book that was actually chosen back in February. This is not something that I typically read. I'm normally into mysteries and things like that. So I was first introduced to this book back in February before we closed the library down. And then we started up a new book club, and the new members actually wanted, out of all of the selections that we picked, this is the book that they chose again. So it's definitely a topic of interest for them. And then every other book since then has been similar in theme or topic to this. So I've noticed that it's a topic of conversation that continues to come up or that we continue to address to work on these issues, or the conversation is continuously had, because I think it's important to continue to have these conversations. And I'm hoping that by having them, they're having them with other people as well.
Alexis Lawrence is an adult services librarian at the Wood Library in Canandaigua. Thank you for the work that you and your colleagues do. Thanks for joining us for Rochester's Books of 2020. And Happy New Year. Let's talk again in 2021. Thank you, Alexis.
Our next guest is Adrian Pettinelli, director of the Henrietta Public Library. Adrian, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So I know you read a lot, and it was probably very difficult to narrow it down to just a few titles or even one, but if you did have to pick one book of the year, what would that be?
So I want to tell you about Leave the World Behind by Rumen Alam. I have been bullying a lot of people into reading this book. It came out around September. And I know it's interesting in the pandemic year, a lot of people are going for these comfort reads, and then other people are like leaning into disaster, pandemic, you know, terrible things. I've definitely mostly gone the disaster route, and this is a disaster book. It was shortlisted for the National Book Award. It's highly literary, but very approachable. A lot of times the National Book Award books are a little literary in a way that can be tough to read, but not this one. You can read it in an afternoon. It's short. It's about a family that rents an Airbnb in the Hamptons, and they go there. They live in Manhattan. They go out to the Hamptons. They're in this Airbnb having a good time. And in the middle of the night, the owners of the house show up, and they say, "We need to stay here. We can't get back to our apartment in Manhattan. The power is entirely out in Manhattan. We think it's entirely out on the eastern seaboard. Something's very wrong. We don't know what it is." They let these strangers into the house, which is a very tense situation. They quickly discover, you know, they do have power in this house, but there's no cell service, no internet, no phone, no TV, no radio, nothing. So this family, these owners, they're all together in the house. It's very weird, and they're waiting, trying to figure out what's going on in this really, you know, secluded, isolated space. And in some ways, it's a quiet book. There's never that moment where, oh, this horrible thing happens, but, you know, something's very wrong. And it's so reading it is really, it's about the people very much who are there and how they interact with each other, how they interact with the situation that they're in. But also there's this mystery of what is happening, you know, and it's one of those books that when you finish, you immediately want to make everybody read it so you can talk about it. A bunch of us here in Henrietta have read it and talked about it ad nauseum. It comes up again and again. Just, I think, one of those unforgettable books. I just loved it. If somebody's looking for something comforting, this isn't their book. But if you want something that's going to make you forget everything else for a couple days, this is a good one.
So it's interesting you mentioned that, because I was reading a piece, I think it was in The Atlantic, about different ways that people have found escapism during the pandemic. And some are through comfort TV shows that they've seen a million times, where they know what's going to happen. There are no surprises. And then other people turn to sort of this doom and gloom type of content where it's worse there than what we're dealing with here, you know? And it sounds like you're leaning toward that side of things. This book doesn't sound like you're going to have nightmares or anything like that, but it's a different kind of crisis than what we're going through right now.
Yeah, the way I've put it to a lot of people is the book gives you that feeling, you know, when you're watching a movie and the character is opening up the stairs to the basement, and you know what they shouldn't do is open the door to the basement. That's how this book feels. There's no, like, nothing jumps out at you, you know, but it's just the moment before.
Leave the World Behind. And who's the author again?
It's Ruman Alam, Ruman Alam.
All right. We'll post that on our book list for this year. And I know, again, it was hard for you to narrow it down. You have a few others in mind that you want to tell our listeners about. What's next on your list, Adrian?
I do. If people are looking for something a little lighter but still serious, I'm going to recommend The Meaning of Mariah Carey, which is Mariah Carey's memoir that came out this year. I'm not a huge Mariah Carey fan, although this book made me more of a fan. I picked it up because I had heard the audiobook is really good, and I always have an audiobook going, and it is. She performs it. She sings. She's just wonderful. She's an entertainer. But also, her life story, I had no idea. Like, she came from a very difficult background and really, you know, built up her life, you know, from nothing. She moved out of her house when she was like 16 or 17, lived by herself in Manhattan, trying to, you know, make this career that now she has. And I just, it was a fascinating story. Her attitude about life after coming through so many hard things is very impressive. And, I found it funny. It was moving. It was just fascinating. And definitely on audio, it was great. I would not call this, you know, a celebrity memoir. It's really a memoir. It would stand against any, you know, any literary memoir, I would say. It's a really good one. So
I have to ask, what brought you to that? If you're not a big Mariah Carey fan, and were you just looking for a new audiobook and others were touting
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I actually heard about it on a podcast I like called Keep It, and they did most of an episode on how much they loved this audiobook. And I'm like, I got to listen to this audiobook. I was very intrigued, and it was definitely a winner. I actually, that Keep It podcast, I get so many good book recommendations from.
Well, we're down to our last couple minutes, Adrienne. I know there are many more books on your list, but if you had to pick just one more, what would that be?
So I would pick Kent State by Deborah Wiles. So that's a teen book. It's a novel in verse about the Kent State Massacre. And I happened to read it at the end of May sitting on my front porch when the Black Lives Matter protest first started breaking out in our city at the end of May there. And it was stunning to me to read about what happened at Kent State and the parallels I saw to what was happening in our city. I mean, the way that the protesters were treated, the way that people viewed the protests, it was stunning to me. And I thought a really important read for me to understand what was happening around me. And I would recommend it to anybody. You can read it in an hour. It's very short, but very impactful and very relevant.
Well, Adrienne, thank you so much for joining us this year. We'll post the titles of your books on our podcast page. Adrienne Pettinelli, director of the Henrietta Public Library, thank you so much and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
Our thanks to all of the guests who took time out of their schedules to tell you about their favorite books. Want to remind you, we've got it all cataloged for you. Go to WXXINews.org/connections. You'll find this show, Rochester's Favorite Books 2020. And right there on the podcast page, we've got the full list for you. Thank you, by the way, for hanging in there with us all throughout this year. It has been a challenging one. And from the whole crew here, want you to feel not only a happy new year, but hopefully a sense of community here as we push into 2021. Producer Megan Mack, engineer Rob Braden, and I will be back with you. Let's see here. It's Thursday. It's next week. So special programming for you tomorrow. Happy New Year and connections right back where we always are with you on Monday. Thanks for supporting member-supported public radio.